Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.
You know, Dan, when companies get hit by malware and phishers, it's always a tough road to figure out what happened. Well, today we have with us Michael Patterson. He's CEO of Plixer, whose company helps you figure out what happened, what data you lost, and a lot more. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. Tell us first your website for people and a little bit about your company.
Sure. The website is Plixer, just P as in Peter, LIXER.com. And what Plixer does is we are kind of like a camera system that you would for network traffic. So you walk into a store, they got cameras all over the place, they're recording everything you do. That's what we do for network traffic. So large companies will use our system to record what everybody's doing on the network, either internally or externally, for several weeks. That way, when there is an attack or there's an infection, they'll use our system to go back and say, what did that system do to get infected? What did it do once it was infected? How did it move around the network? How did it communicate? Who did it attempt to break into? Very similar to how, you know, the security would use the videos captured by the cameras to look at maybe the behavior of a shoplifter. That's what we do.
Having said that, you talk large corporations. Do you also work with smaller companies?
Yes, you bet. So sometimes the security service providers will use our system for multiple customers because, you know, although the product isn't difficult or expensive, it's still another security system that will shoot out messages because we do some threat detection. And inevitably, you know, we're looking at IP addresses, which for some people is kind of a high-tech source of data. So for smaller, medium-sized companies, they'll either buy the system. Smaller companies will work with a security service provider to make sure that they have a way to investigate what happened.
But you say at some point human intervention remains the last defense against the spread of malware. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, prevention really in the industry, although the firewall companies and security are all talking about prevention, we can stop it. Well, they can't. I mean, they can stop some, especially if there's a track record of the malware, but obviously the malware is still getting into all companies. They clearly are failing in some ways to stop attacks. So basically, the human intervention comes in because, hey, you have to be the person that looks at that email and says, hey, should I click on that? That looks like any old Facebook email or LinkedIn email that I get every day. Should I just click on it, or should I maybe hover over the links, look at the tool tip there to make sure that it's going to the proper domain? Or am I, you know, in a hurry? I've got three Facebook emails, and there, some of them are from what look like could be interesting to me. I'm just going to click. And so if humans don't provide that last line of defense and say, you know, I'm not going to go to that website, or I'm not going to click on that link, if they don't do that, then, yeah, you're potentially increasing your probability of getting infected.
Dan, it's all yours.
Thank you. I want to start off by making an assumption that probably the majority of the people that are listening to this program are not as tech savvy as you are, which is probably a pretty good assumption.
Okay.
So let me ask you first and foremost, would you please tell me and our listeners what is malware?
So malware is something that, given the choice, you wouldn't want on your computer. So, yeah, so that's an easy way to define it right there. But it's also, it's probably taking something from your computer that you otherwise wouldn't give out, or making that that computer behave in a way, like mining Bitcoin, in a way that you wouldn't normally agree to. So, and most of the time, it's unbeknownst to you. You have no idea it's happening.
We're gonna go into theoretical.
Okay.
Probably the most talked about news story for the last 9 months is the supposed hacking of the Russian government or Russian operatives into the election system in the United States, which in fact caused Hillary Clinton to lose the election. Now,
okay,
we can talk about whether or not she should have won or shouldn't have won. It's irrelevant to this point.
Yep.
My question to you is, how valid is the claim?
Well, you know, without having the data, I certainly have an opinion on. I think that certainly it was too coincidental that the information came out just prior, day prior, 2 days prior, whatever it was, before the election. So it's very coincidental, right? A tremendous amount of insight. Obviously, it was someone who compromised her email. So I don't think it was coincidence. I think it was thought out. Like, we're going to announce this. Was it the Russians? I think that the people who investigate it are going to have a better chance of figuring that out than someone like me who just listens to the news. But I will say this: when hackers compromise a system, they're always thinking, most of the time, they're thinking, I could get caught. So what they'll do is they'll execute their deeds from a machine that is maybe in a different country. So if I want to, you know, attack Hillary Clinton's mail server, I wouldn't do it from my hometown or from, you know, I just wouldn't do that because they could trace it back potentially. I would probably do it from I would compromise a machine in France, which would be used to compromise a machine in Latvia, and then I would execute my deeds and my scripts to try to compromise the server from what appears to be Latvia. And all in my scripts, since there's a chance that they could be discovered and reverse engineered, decompiled, I'll make sure that my comments in that code are in Chinese, or they're in some other language other than my native tongue, because I want to mislead people as much as possible to prevent them from figuring out that, oh, it was a Russian guy in the Ukraine, or, you know, a Russian speaking person in the Ukraine. I don't, you know. So the NSA is well aware of this, and sometimes they have to kind of hop back to these systems. Hopefully there's logs. A lot of times the hackers are smart. They'll delete logs, which is why it's extremely important to use a system that, you know, pulls logs in real time off of all critical systems at all times. It's not done widely, but it should be. I am on the side of caution of accusing a country like Russia of actually being behind attacks without having access to the data myself. I will say that my Russian friends are telling me that there's a tremendous amount of propaganda in the media to hate Russians, to hate Americans in Russia. So if you watch TV or whatever and you're in Russia, there's a lot of state-funded propaganda to basically hate Americans, the United States.
So let's move back to our genre, and that is small business. We see commercials on ransomware where Russians or Ukrainians or North Koreans or whatever get control of your computer and you can't do anything, you can't run your business unless you pay a ransom.
Yeah.
And how serious a threat is that to small business?
I think it's very serious. The nature of zero-day attacks like WannaCry, if someone wants to get you, Don or Dan, they're going to send you enough emails related to LinkedIn or Facebook or whatever that you're already getting similar emails that eventually one day you're going to be careless and click. They're going to get you. Or either you're going to get compromised or someone who you work with or a vendor that you rely on is going to get compromised, and it's going to impact your business. There's no doubt. Everybody's impacted by malware. So it's just a matter of time. Statistically, you're going to get infected or someone close to you is going to get very close to you is going to get infected. So you got to have backups. You have to be ready for it, and you have to do fire drills to figure out if this machine is infected, how quickly typically can we get back online. A lot of people do the backups. They forget to do the fire drills.
What's a fire drill?
Fire drill is when you say, okay, that system, turn it off. It's not available to you. Okay, let's go to the backups. What do we do? Well, let's restore from backup. Okay, restore from backup. Does everything seamless? Is it all the data there and all the resources that you need to do your job there? Is it current? Is it from the last backup? Did it all work? Because you want to know, depending on your business, that if you lose power to your company and the lights go out, a lot of times we'll know, like, if you have to send everybody home, how much that's going to cost you in potentially lost revenue. You want to do the same thing with malware. It has to be part of your fire drill.
Dan, I hate to interrupt you, but we have to take a quick break for one of our sponsors.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at ValeroCleanGas.com.
Dan's tip of the day should resonate with every small business. Having a bright, clear, physical plan always adds profits. One recent survey revealed 71% of walkers responded that they would enter a newly refurbished establishment even if they didn't have anything to buy or were in market for buy. So how important is it a small business for physical establishments where customers come in to buy? It's very important. Sprucing up a small business makes sense. Saving cents may cost a small business dollars if the right quality paint is not used. According to Hotel Association figures, the average time between major spruce-ups for hotels, for member hotels, dropped from 8 to 7 years in the past 12 months. Why? Because new establishments are very important. But don't think these statistics apply only to brick-and-mortar stores. The entry page for any business is that company's storefront. For those online leaders who think they are immune to the need for change to their storefronts, think again. While changing index pages initially loses visitors, new visitors are usually generated within 3 months. So today's message, in a physical plant or online, stay new. It will help profits.
We've been asked recently by a number of people, how can they listen to past shows? And if you go to recalculating.biz, you'll find a link to iHeartRadio, which will allow you to go back and listen to shows that you didn't get a chance to finish or never heard. So we encourage you to go there, recalculating.biz.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
We're back with Michael Patterson. He's CEO of Plixer, and he and Dan are having a fascinating discussion on just what happens when you get hacked or have malware. Back to you, Dan.
Thank you, Don. Michael, I don't know whether this is folklore or fact, or is it urban legend? Is there truly a difference from cyber attack between a Windows-based system and a Mac OS-based system?
I don't think there is any difference in the necessarily the goal of the attack is to, you know, ultimately receive some type of illegal compensation. I think that it is true that Microsoft machines tend to be targeted more only because there's a much larger consumer base of Microsoft products. So naturally, they're people are going to write their malware for those operating systems.
We had a guest on the show some time ago, and we were talking about cybersecurity. And he said, it just kind of blew me away, and I'd be curious whether you agree with him. He says that the best cybersecurity that you can do as a small business is when you go home at night, turn off the computer.
It'd be interesting to hear why he would say that. I leave my computer on at night, but you know we monitor my traffic. I think probably that might be a good strategy. So I just don't understand why. I mean, you could get updates during the night that could, you know, for a 0 day, and then, you know, the update for it comes out at 4 a.m. before you get up, and my machine's running, so it's automatically going to install that and reboot. I will say this, is if you're a small business and you're worried about this stuff, and you absolutely should be, because it is going to affect you. And it's getting worse because the defensive mechanisms out there are just failing. They're just not working like they would. So we're losing the battle. You absolutely should be using a service, and these outsourced security service providers can help you with this, where people within your organization are receiving emails from them that are very targeted. And they're basically trying to see if they can get your employees or your executives to click on something or call a phone number where they can socially engineer. So I'm not even talking about a malicious piece of code, a software. I'm talking about just con artists. Because really, that's one of the largest forms of theft using cyber. It's not even malware. So a service that's actually trying to manipulate your employees with an email, trying to get them to click on something, and then, you know, ultimately if you click, they know who you are because they sent you the email and they gave you a unique link. They call you up and say, hey, I sent you that email. You clicked. Here's a couple of things to think about next time because I'm going to keep doing this. So rather than routine training, how about something that just constantly helps your company maintained a heightened sense of awareness that, hey, every stinking email you get could be from that vendor who's trying to see if you're going to click. And if you click, your boss is going to find out about it. Security team's going to be aware of it. It might even go into your personal file that, you know, out of 20 emails that were sent to you throughout the year, you clicked on two of them. Okay, so your risk factor for the company is maybe low in comparison to some of the other employees in the company who don't apparently really care and frequently, you know, click on just about anything that comes in. You want to know who those employees are so you can train them and get them up to speed and let them know how serious it is.
I have another question for you, Michael. I recently had a problem with my Mac computer, and I called the tech support at Mac, and what they found out when they did their remote control of the computer, which I find to be fascinating technology, that either through a mistake on my part or clicking on one of those things that you talked about, which is a mistake, I had three different security software packages that were running at conflict with each other and conflict with the built-in security software with the Mac program. They said, you need to get rid of all the external stuff and just rely on the Mac system because everything else seems to be in conflict with what we're trying to do. Have you ever heard about that?
No, I've never heard. That's I mean, you made the outgoing call, right? The call didn't come into you. You actually made the outgoing call.
No, I called Apple specifically because I was concerned about I was constantly getting these screens, do this, do that, and I refused to do that. And I finally called Apple and said, you know, what's going on here? And he said, well, you've got at least two, maybe three. We went through the whole system and cleaned up the hard drive, got rid of all of those externals, and I haven't had any problems since then. But I understand what you're talking about, because sometimes when you click, it's like if you click on an ad for a magazine.
Yeah,
I'm sure I'm not the only person in the world anymore, but when I see an offer, I want to read the fine print, because some places, if you click on this to download this menu bar, you also give up your right, and they're allowed to do whatever you want, whatever they want. So I'm now at the point where I'm reading the fine print before I click on anything.
Yeah. Yeah, because ultimately, you know, let's digress on it. That's an extremely good point that you just brought up, and here's why. Most free software that we get today is at really costing you personally identifiable information, PII. So if you install Words with Friends, it's a free game. You know, you can buy the commercial version, but really the free version, what it's doing in exchange is it's grabbing your, you know, potentially your contacts. It's grabbing your location. It wants to know where you are in the world. Now, why do they need that? Because they want to resell it. They want to use it for whatever reason. So if you get the free operating system from Microsoft, they're grabbing all your contacts, they're grabbing all your calendar events, they want to know what you're doing so they can push ads to you. If you, I recently learned we use the Plantronics headsets, you know, that way I don't have to pick up a phone and, you know, I can just wear a headset and talk. Well, what they're doing, Plantronics, is they're grabbing details about every single call every employee makes. You know, whether or not they're transferring the call, whether they're putting the customer on hold. They're grabbing information about who the administrator is. They're grabbing information about how people authenticate onto your network. Now, this is a headset company, right? But if you use their free phone, they're grabbing all this data and they're creating big data out of it. And if you don't like it, you can't even turn it off. Now, they had the ability to turn it off, and then they took it away and said, no, we like that big data too much. If you upgraded to the new and improved version, well, guess what? They also took away the ability to turn it off. So, you know, you small businesses and medium businesses that, you know, they're just not aware of the majority of what's being taken from them. Right. Out of their businesses is from companies that they trust and they gave them permission to from the end user license agreement. So if they're not like you and reading the fine print, and the fine print, by the way, just says we'll grab information from your computer, they don't even always provide the details. And guess what? They can change their agreement at any time without telling you.
Right.
And grab more information. So you're absolutely right. You want to be hyper paranoid and you know, even if you block these guys, you know, you're a big enterprise, you're like, oh, I'll just block them. Well, that's not going to work, because every upgrade or hard-coded into the software was after a couple of months, use a different domain, and they'll just get the information out of you. So I've actually been writing to my congressmen and our senators here and saying, look, you know, you need to be aware that there's just massive heist going on. And I think I'm sure that it's worse than malware. These companies that we trust are just taking everything they can out of our organizations with permission.
Yeah. Don, how are we doing on time?
Well, we have about 4 minutes. I just want to drop in here. I know it's fascinating. Dan, you always manage to get onto a topic I hadn't even thought of, but it's fascinating. And Michael, will you tell our audience your website again and how people can reach you?
Sure. They can reach us at Plixer.com. That's P as in Peter, L as in Larry, I as in Indigo, X as in X-ray, E as in Elephant, R as in Robert.com, Plixer.com.
We're talking with Michael Patterson. I have from what I'm listening, you know, liberals complain about a big government and how 1984 is here. But from what the conversation I've just heard, we should really be more scared about private business and what they're gathering from us And if it's ever turned over to, like, the Chinese government, we might be in trouble.
I think they already have most of it. Details about, you know, our health records, our Social Security numbers, our images of our thumbprints, fingernail, yeah, everything. It's available. A lot of it's out there now.
Where's it going from here?
You know, it's yet to be really fully appreciated. Right now, it's mostly being just used for ads. So will they eventually use it to – but my fear is that they're going to use it to completely take over my identity and ultimately my money. So I can't function, and I only have one identity. So that's my fear. Right now it's used mostly for marketing and ads, but imagine if someone could take over your identity and you know, electronically, they don't even need to look like me. They can just have access to all my bank accounts, transfer all my money, and then it's gone. That's my fear.
Michael, how did you get into this business? You seemed a fascinating individual. How did you get into it?
Well, we were initially in the network monitoring business, collecting data about, you know, what people are doing on a network, why is the network slow. But then we found out from doing case studies, more and more companies, like schools and hospitals, were telling us, hey, we had this infected machine the other day, and it was doing weird things on a network, and we ended up using your system to go in and look at the traffic patterns to find out what it was doing. And ultimately, our customers ended up pushing us into the investigative business. That's kind of how it evolved, you know.
How long have you been in business?
Since 1999.
Wow. Dan, you get to ask the last question.
So if you could give our listeners, our small business people, who are probably not as tech savvy as you, what is the best thing that they can do to protect their systems on an individual basis?
Engage a outsourced security company, someone that can – our company doesn't do that. We provide the tools to them, actually. But engage a company that's going to do some of the things I talked about, like grab all your logs and authentication and pour through them with scripts automatically. They're going to help you with your backups and the fire drills. They're going to email your staff routinely, trying to get them to click on things. These services are well worth the money to avoid the frustration and anxiety that you're going to have when you're compromised.
Are they expensive?
No. The services, you know, depending on, they usually do it per person and per server. So, you know, it can run a few hundred dollars a month to, you know, a few thousand, depending on the size of the company.
Michael, we've been talking with Michael Patterson, CEO of Plixer. He's been a fascinating guest, and we really thank him for being with us. I learned a lot. What do you think, Dan?
I think we did a great service for our readers and listeners today of getting into the whole idea of why security is so important. And, Michael, I think you helped our awesome listeners learn a lot, and you gave them a lot of good things to think about. And thank you for being on the show today.
Sure. Thank you. Bye, guys.
Life. It's made up of the simple day-to-day moments that keep us all running on full of joy, passion, and restlessness. It's singing full on to your car radio with the windows wide open. It's a whole bunch of early morning rush hours and a few late-night runs for Rocky Road. It's full of pit stops and drive-thrus. It's life, and we live it between fill-ups at Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
Dan Perkins here from recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Small business funding is easier these days thanks to a new breed of lender called FinTech lenders. These internet-based lenders cut the time between applying for funds and getting the funds to just hours instead of months. They also make it easier to repay your loans, but their costs might be a little higher for their service. The next time you need dollars for your small business, try them. You might like the change. I'm Dan Perkins for recalculating.biz and your small business tip of the day.
We're going to have some exciting guests in September, including the former head of Apple, John Sculley. We'll have a president of a dog and cat food company and the founder of a company with a mobile app for workers, a barber who's created a new shave cream, and the head of an innovative coffee company, a leader of a firm that makes it easier for small business to utilize social media, and many things more. So stay tuned, and if you miss something,
go to recalculating.biz and listen to a past episode.
Welcome back to Recalculating, the program dedicated to American small business. Now it's time to bring together our two experts, Dan Perkins and Don Mazzella, as they discuss things that are happening now that are affecting your business success.
Dan, our next guest is someone I found extremely interesting. His book is called Whole Self, A Concise History of the Birth and Evolution of Human Consciousness. Of course, some people have told me that I've been unconscious for years, but Kenrick Mercer is our guest, and I'm going to turn it over to you to talk about him and his book.
Kenrick, let's start off by talking a little bit about your background and what caused you to want to write this book.
Well, I was a history major in college, and so I've always been interested in history and read it voraciously. And I've also been interested in the sciences and particularly truth. And so truth has been an important thing for me. And and then I've worked with virtually thousands of people over my lifetime, and working with them and seeing how they get caught up emotionally and make bad judgments and tried to see the difference and why that was going on, and between my experience with people and history, I just evolved to want to talk about the impact of consciousness and the ability that we still have to get into the pre-state of of consciousness, which I call whole self, and the difference in how we function and how we operate within those two, and the problems that has occurred since consciousness, and a way to get out of that state and awaken to the whole self, which lies latent in each of us.
Kenrick, I want to follow up with another question, because what you're saying is stimulating a thought in my brain. And I'm wondering whether or not that part of the problem that we have on planet Earth is that we haven't figured out that different people process information in different ways. Not their language, but their thought processes are different. And that we tend to think in America the way Americans think, and we expect other people in the rest of the world to think the same way that we do, but in reality they don't, do they?
No, everybody comes from a different state, and it's based on their childhood and what they've encoded, which is encoding as a process of assimilating your cultural information that you are born into, and it's different if you're born in Syria. It's totally different than if you're born in America, and that's part of the problem that's creating the upset and the wars, and terrorism, of course, is that encoding of our childhood culture, and it's recently been noted how we got that with the E neuron, which was discovered in the brain, which assimilates our culture wordlessly, even beginning the day we're born, we begin that assimilation. And so we're assimilating culture, religion, prejudice, as well as what we eat and how we dress. It's the whole thing is different.
So let me go back to your comment about assimilation. We have in the world a group of people known as Muslims, and they follow the Quran and Sharia law. And under the tenets of their religion, they basically say, do not assimilate with Christians or Jews. They're prohibited under their religion to assimilate, which is why when they went to Europe, they created all these enclaves, which we call no-go zones, because they didn't want to assimilate with the French or the Germans or the English or whoever. They wanted to stay in their own structure. And yeah. here we so we have a religion, a way of life that says we're not going to assimilate. How does that affect the overall culture of the world if you've got one portion of it saying, we're not going to join you?
Yeah. And, well, it's the same in with every religion is if you're born into it, you assimilate what the family feels. Now, sometimes somebody can get angry and reject it, but that's part of the process. But generally, you assimilate it, and you carry that into the rest of your life. Unless you recognize it, and you can, and I've had people do it, is form an intention, a heartfelt intention, and they can, with great effort, change their change what they've assimilated. And see, and what I say is assimilate. Once you see what you've assimilated is not true, you by recognizing what is true, you can change that encoding, but it's not easy.
Well, if you look at the Muslim faith, at 1.3 billion people, the basic tenets of the Muslim faith have never gone through a reformation. They're the things that we're teaching today, that are being taught today in the Muslim faith, are the same things that were being taught when Muhammad founded the religion. In fact, he told his followers, change not a period. And so there's been no assimilation, no change, no reformation in the Muslim faith in 1,400 years, where all the other religions of the world have gone through some significant changes. I would think that the consistency of 1,400 years of doing the same thing, believing the same things, got to be a powerful influence on a person's life.
Oh, absolutely. But I wouldn't just confine it to Muslims. It's true of every religion. It's true of political parties in the United States. I mean, if your parents were strongly Republican, you tend to be Republican. If they're strongly Democrat, you tend to be. That can change through, like, a rebellion or some insight, but basically it stays the same.
But what we have in the United States and also in Europe, we have a situation where we are becoming more and more secular, walking away from religious beliefs, and we don't go to church, we don't believe in religion or anything else, and the churches are empty because people have decided they know what's best for them. They don't need an image or a belief or a set of rules to follow. And
I call that truth. Americans are more and more looking at scientific and factual information and seeking truth. And that's a powerful creative force. And it's actually gaining ground very quickly.
So you're saying that Americans are looking for truth?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
We're at a time in our country where our principal vehicles for communication are littered with individuals who don't want to seek the truth. In fact, they want to pay any attention to the truth. They want to rewrite history or rewrite the truth or abandon what has been part of our tenet. So
yeah, it is a problem because of all the internet and all the false information and stories and all that, and part of this book is about recognizing it and seeking the truth. I have a strong section in there versus belief and truth, and belief is has no boundaries. It's totally limitless. And while truth is narrow, it only has one answer. And the importance of truth versus belief.
So let me give you an example. we have had for many, many years a belief that
global warming is a serious problem for the world. And we had all of these scientists who were postulating that if we don't do certain things, the world's going to get destroyed. And so we made changes in our the way we conduct ourselves, the cars we drive, the how we generate electrical power, on and on, and made all these changes, try and improve the environment. And we came up with this, quote, Paris Accord. And Mr. Trump decided that he was not going to have America be involved in the Paris Accord. And lo and behold, NASA and a bunch of other scientific communities reported last week that the measurement process by which the global warming people were measuring temperatures and making projections was in fact flawed science. So we have generations of people who've been told what they believe to be true because somebody said, we're going to lose the polar ice cap, this is going to happen, the world's going to come to an end. And so a generation, if not two or three, believed that to be true. And now much bigger scientific communities are saying the fundamental research was flawed and it's not true. How does somebody who's lived most of their life believing that CO2 is going to be the end of the world, how do they adjust to a new truth by a greater scientific agencies that are saying that the data and way it was collected was flawed and we don't have a problem?
Yeah, well, that eventually the truth always comes out, and it may take time for that to occur. And there's often differing views on different points historically, but eventually, predicting the future eventually happens, and there's evidence, and the truth falls out. It's okay to have a question about an idea. And it's good, as a matter of fact, it's very healthy to have a question about an idea until it's validated, and that's part of making good decisions. Is if you're not sure, you wait and gather evidence until you feel that it is truth. So that's a very important part of the process. And so there's different views on a lot of things. The truth will come out.
But it's interesting, if we have in our political environment in the United States, we have a mainstream media who doesn't seem to be concerned about the truth. They're more concerned about the story. And some people call that fake news. But there are people who trust or used to trust. Used to be said that Walter Cronkite, when he was doing CBS News, was the most trusted man in the United States. Mm-hmm. Not the president or a senator or congressman, but what Walter Cronkite said had to be true. And so what I'm saying is that we have situations where things are believed to be true, but now we've gone to the point that the political process, the political mind, has distorted what is the truth for a political objective. And then when the truth, as you say, is found out, the political mind has to adjust to try and figure out what to do. I mean, look at CNN, who has decided that its mission is to destroy the president of the United States, and yet ultimately what happened is that they destroyed their reputation. They're now the 13th most watched network after reruns of Gilligan Island on cable. So their desire to quote, tell the truth and to lie about it and mislead the American people, when the truth came out, as you said, when it was finally determined that they were lying to us, the American people no longer had credibility in that particular report, and so that they lost faith, if that's the right word to use, in what was being reported at CNN.
And I think that there is a general belief in the United States today that the mainstream media, which of Walter Cronkite's era was is totally different than what it is today. And if you make a mistake, you just do a correction on page 29 or on a later show.
Before you hear this or this or even this, before you turn a key, step on the gas and let it rip, before you get up and out and on the road, you have to be fueled by something. Make sure that something is Valero. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
In New York this week, 500 managers and bankers from across the fintech world met to discuss the rising use of online financial resource companies. It was the latest of a number of such conclaves across the country. What does it mean for small business leaders? Speaker after speaker droned on about the funds available to grow their small businesses. Other panels talked about the ease such companies are making the loan process. Finding the money to grow can be as short as an hour. Some speakers said the average was 3 days versus going to a more traditional banking resource, which could take up to 3 months. But as one speaker pointed out, small businesses can suffer in one way from the fintech revolution. The personal banking touch that puts the small business leader in physical proximity to the banker, that personal touch that can come in handy should growth plans not work out exactly as expected, is not there. There is an old saying, when you owe enough to the bank, you own the bank. Most banks won't let that happen, but having a personal relationship can ease some issues. Fintech bankers are about doing everything over the internet. For those times when the small business succeeds, this works great. But what happens if they don't? It's harder without that personal touch.
So what's happened in your mind and to the values that we used to have in this country? Are they disappearing?
No, I think that it's part of the difference between the whole self and consciousness. Consciousness can range all over the place and can have a thousand ideas where, in prior to consciousness, we didn't have words. Like, no words would come through your head because there were no words. They were an abstraction. So at that, mm-hmm. in that state, the only fear you could have is fear in the moment, because you could only be in the moment. You couldn't be out of it. And the only thing you'd be is standing there. And if in your sensory system there was something to fear, you would alert to that fear and you'd take immediate spontaneous action and appropriate response, or you wouldn't exist. And so you could only be in the present, so you're only dealing with present things and present responses. And everybody would like to say, they always say, I'd like to be in the moment. And that's a state that we were prior to consciousness. And we can still get that state in various ways, as I talk about in the book. But it would be a great freshening of reality, politically and otherwise, to be in the moment, respond to what the fear that's present, rather than creating imagined fears and that everybody's reacting to, which is part of the political system, is to scare people into different space and with belief and those things, instead of just simply responding in the moment to the truth. We still have that capacity. It lies latent, but it has to reawaken. And my intention is, in the book, is to alert people that we have that state of consciousness lying latent within us and how to access that state of consciousness, because all of this arguing about facts and what's truth and who's right and who's wrong tears the country apart.
So what do you think is the biggest challenge, as the author of this book and looking at America, from your perspective, of truth, what is the biggest challenge you see facing us as a nation?
I think it's individually is as a nation and as a world that instead of moving towards hate and defensiveness and reaction is to begin to be harmonious with each other, which is the state of whole self, to be harmonious with political parties, to be harmonious with the world. And the world is not going to get better by digging up barriers and untruths about each other, and instead seeing that if the world's going to survive, if our Earth is going to survive, we've got to start moving towards harmony, whether it's political parties or with us as individuals or us as nations. And unless we move together and recognize our mutual problems, we're bound for a bad ending.
Where do you think, in your opinion, that if I could be so encompassing, where did the world change? What caused the change? Is there, in your mind, a particular moment in time in the history of the world that this thing went awry and has continued to veer off in the wrong direction?
Well, yeah, it's 60,000 years ago when consciousness evolved was certainly the beginning, and it's important to recognize that, because at that stage we began to abstract think. What came up was fear, and with fear we could imagine all the things that might happen to us, to our children, to our most precious beings, our children, and we began to start to control everything that we feared. And that was okay as long as it was within our tribe, but as tribes got bigger and there were more people in the world, we began to bump against other tribes who had brought a different culture and saw different fears. And then if somebody harmed another person from another tribe, then we began to arm against the other tribe, whatever it was, we tried to control it. Matter of fact, one of the first things we feared was we realized that we would die. Before that, we had no way of thinking about that they were going to die. And once we knew we were going to die, we tried to come up with something. And of course, religion was the first solution. We'll live hereafter. And then another thing we thought of was fear. Every tribe has suffered famine and not having food. From my perspective, it was the beginning of farming. And when we began to create assets, then we had to protect them from other tribes. So we had to create government and armies to protect it, and on and on and on. But it goes not only to those major fears, but to personal fears. You know, what if my child did this, or what if they did that, or what if they made a mistake, and how to control our children, and how to control everything around us. And it's just gotten to where we're fear-minded, and we're trying to control everything we fear.
How do we fix it?
Well, within ourselves is that state of whole self, and it's a state of being in the moment, seeing the truth, and responding spontaneously and appropriately to that truth. And in that state, it's a state of well-being, a state of tranquility when there's nothing to respond to. And when we respond, we respond precisely to the problem and not to a bunch of analysis. One of the things we overanalyze and overthink when we're totally encoded from whole self to respond spontaneously and appropriately to the event or to the situation. And our tendency is is because we can think, we overanalyze and overthink. In business, it's a huge handicap. Most administrators way overanalyze, overthink, and often make wrong decisions instead of trusting themselves to respond instinctively to the best answer, to the truth, and respond appropriately and spontaneously to that truth. It saves time, but it also makes better decisions. There's been thousands of studies on triple answer questions, and the first response has been shown to be absolutely superior by a huge percentage to overthinking the problem and then picking an answer. The first response is appropriate, and so instead of overthinking or overanalyzing, we trust ourselves to respond appropriately, and it's quick, it's easy, and it's effective.
Kendrick, how can people reach you?
Oh, Lori, how can they reach us?
The website is www.kendrickmercer.com.
So will you spell it out?
www.kendrickmercer.com.
And if someone wanted to email Kendrick?
Yes, they could email him. There is, on the website, there is a place to email him, and it'll come to us. So there's a few different contacts, and it also describes the book, the philosophy, his history, and all of that.
Well, the reason he was on the program is I was fascinated by it. But I think if you can, I think you should send a copy to Dan. I think he'd love to hear about it.
Excellent.
Okay. Well, I'll send the link so he can email you directly.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for your time.
You bet. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay.
At Valero, we believe life gets lived between every fill-up. So whether you go down the road on two wheels or four, whether your Wednesday night is spent racing to the grocery store or down a track, and whether you're dropping off the mail, the pizza, the kids, or all of the above, we're here to make sure you're never running on empty. Valero top-tier certified quality fuel keeps your engine running cleaner, better, and longer. Find a station near you at valerocleangas.com.
Dan Perkins here with your Recalculating Small Business Tip of the Day. Did you know that a candle can be an energy saver for home and office? An old-fashioned candle can be a new-fashioned energy saver, and at the same time provide a warm glow to any home office. Adding a candle seems like a silly thing to do, but it can help check for drafts. You can use the candle to test if new windows are needed. Here's how. First, take a roll of blue painter's tape and tear off pieces and put them on your left arm. Pass the candle around the opening and mark the spots around each window and door where the candle flame flickers. When you have finished your test, step back and see if you have tape around all of the window or only one side. The more tape you have on the window, the more money you will save by replacing those windows and doors. Check out recalculating.biz for more useful small business suggestions. This has been Dan Perkins with your Small Business Tip of the Day.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Well, we enjoyed the show today, and we encourage you to go to the website, as I said before, recalculating.biz, listen to Glass shows, and we're also going to start giving you some heads up about who's coming in the future. And we thank you for listening, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Thank you for being with us today. From Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins.
Welcome to Recalculating Small Business. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money.
Dan Perkins here, your co-host, along with Don Mazzella of Recalculating for Small Business. Our radio program is dedicated to you, helping the small business owners increase their profits. We draw our name from Recalculating, voted the best small business book of 2017 by the Independent Press. In this book, it features ways to grow your small business. Now, here's Don Mazzella.